Starting Tech News Weekly. In 3, 2, 1.
Hey, everybody, welcome to Tech News Weekly. I'm your host, Andrew Zarin. Of course, I'm joined by John Bubb. How you doing, John?
Hey, Andrew, I got a question for you.
Yeah, what's the question?
Is this shirt brown and white or black and yellow?
It's green and periwinkle. Today, for people who don't know, the internet is in a heated debate regarding a dress. If the dress is gold and black, gold and blue, or black and blue?
No. Gold and white, black and blue.
Okay. It's a blue dress.
Yes.
Okay. I see
blue. And
it's
not black.
It actually is black, but it's like a chiffon material, like a chiffon type material.
When you actually look at the RGB values for it, it's a brown.
It's a brown. It's like a golden brown.
Yeah.
I was at the doctor's office today and they were having a discussion and like 70% of people are like, oh no, that's white. And I go, no.
I don't get that.
I don't either. I don't either.
I looked on both my desktop and my phone because I mean, I have my desktop calibrated to, you know, doing design work and stuff and it's nice and bright. I'm like, okay, well, I see it here. So then I'll check on my phone. Looks exactly the freaking same.
Yeah, I don't know. To me, it's the same everywhere.
People really have to have really crappy monitors or really screwed up monitors to see white. There's no way that's white.
Yeah, I don't think it is. But who knows? Maybe we're wrong.
I think I'm going to have to disown some of my family members because they saw white.
I think so.
No way.
Yeah, I think so too.
We can't be friends. We can't be family anymore if you see white and gold.
I don't know. It's actually astonishing to me. And I guess, you know, people see color a little differently than others. So some people see white, they don't see the blue, and other people see black, and other people see gold.
Yeah, there were a couple articles on all the scientific crap as to how people see colors differently, and apparently that's just, you know, a spectrum at where things kind of really differ between people. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. If you're not seeing blue and black or blue and brown, you're wrong.
Yes.
Plain
and
simple.
Plain and simple. John told you guys, you're wrong. It's over. John, a lot of stuff coming out the end of the week. Yesterday, the FCC approved its net neutrality laws.
That was this week.
This week, I'm sorry. Yesterday. They reclassified broadband as a utility. Now,
Title 2.
Now, this is becoming a heated debate regarding if this is a positive or a negative. We actually don't know yet because guess what? We don't have the exact ruling.
Yeah. I kind of want to play devil's advocate with you.
Go ahead. Yeah, let's talk about this.
And I know you're probably more along the lines of what I'm thinking, whereby this, as far as we can see right now, doesn't seem like a bad thing because what we've heard so far is that Tom Wheeler, in an editorial a week or two ago, wrote and said that he wants to do Title II, but he wants to do a very narrow definition of Title II, whereby he's going to forbear certain sections of Title II, whereby they won't actually be applicable. I can't even really say that word. They won't really apply to Title II won't mostly actually apply to the internet. They're taking very specific narrow sections of Title II,
and it's case by case
that for net neutrality.
And it's going to be case by case.
Yes,
from what I understood. Now, there's a lot of misconception out there. I'm not saying right now.
I don't know if it's misconception or if it's actually true because the one FCC commissioner or official, I forget the guy's name. Was very adamant against this.
A lot of people are against it. A lot of people are for it. Now, my whole thing is we don't know how this is going to be handled fully. We don't know what's in those 8 pages of rulings. I mean, how many pages did they say the exact thing
it's
was?
It's a 332-page document.
But only 8 pages.
According to Tom Merritt, and I spoke with him yesterday about this, Tom says that the majority of those 332 pages are the comments from the public during the comment period.
Yeah.
And then there's really only 8 pages that outline what it is that they're going to do with Title II and net neutrality regarding the internet. But we don't know what those 8 pages say.
Yeah. I
pointed this out to a friend of mine that is completely against this, and he says that I'm being very naive if I truly think that. And I'm just trying to – I'm having a hard time understanding the other side.
Okay, so I'll tell you what, a lot of people are afraid of this, and they think that their free speech is going to be crippled now because the government is controlling your internet.
I don't understand.
They're thinking, well, now the ISPs are going to push down taxes to you, and you're going to pay more for internet service. The service is going to become unreliable. I think a lot of people just don't understand that it's not the government that's handling this. The government is not becoming your internet service provider. I've had multiple discussions with people, and a lot of the stuff is lunacy. A lot of the stuff is, you know, depending on what party you're associated with, you're going down party lines and you're taking a stance on this without knowing the facts. The reality is we don't know what's in those, you know, let's say out of the 300 and something, let's say 20 of them are part of the ruling. We don't know exactly what's in that yet. The positives, from what I understood, is that mobile and wireless internet is going to be classified as the same as bandwidth for your home.
Broadband. Which it wasn't in the original 2010 net neutrality ruling.
Yeah, it wasn't.
Which is a good thing.
Which is a good thing, because now that could go into many different directions. One, does that mean service reliability has to be up to par with home broadband? Does that mean throttling cannot be done? Does that mean that data caps need to go away? There's a lot that goes into this.
Interesting? FCC Commissioner Ajit Pai, that's the guy that I was trying to think of. He says that he's very skeptical that the FCC will stick with its forbearance plan, and he wanted that the open internet rules would also lead to slower broadband speeds and more taxes. I'm just having a hard time seeing that point of view. I'm not saying that it couldn't happen. It's just from everything that I've seen so far, it seems like the FCC is only going to do this on a case-by-case basis.
Yeah. You know, I was talking to someone.
Nothing's going to change.
I was talking to someone yesterday that is against this ruling. And they're not really for it. They don't want the government to be involved. And I understand that. And I understand where he's coming from. I also think that in some scenarios, if there was no government intervention, a lot of places would not have, you know, heat. They would not have electricity. They would not have been wired in time. I mean, I'm sure by now they would have, but it wouldn't have been as quickly as possible. Phone is the same scenario. Some government intervention works. Now, does it work for the internet? What I suggested, and he was talking, well, why does the government have to get involved with, you know, private business? Well, how about this? The reason why the government's getting involved is because of lack of competition, really, because you can't, if you have Comcast and you're stuck with them and they're abusing this, like they're not treating packets equally, where are you going to go? You really don't have an option for cable internet, right, John?
Yeah.
There's no option.
I mean, to be honest, there are still many areas where if you're looking for extremely fast internet, and I know that we're kind of in a minority, me and you, in this, where we need at least 50 megabits per second down. Oftentimes, you only have one place to turn, and that's Comcast. And so, that's pretty much the boat that I'm in. And I'm in Metro Detroit.
Okay. So here's the thing. Rural areas would not have gotten connected as quickly as they did if there was no government intervention. That's what I truly believe. Now, I'm more of a libertarian. I don't consider myself a Democrat. I don't consider myself a Republican. I am whatever I think makes sense for that scenario. I don't follow party lines. So this, I don't, the whole concept of people just following the party line when it comes to this makes no sense to me. The other side is, well, why is there a lack of competition? There's a lack of competition because someone like Time Warner Cable goes into New York City and they're one of the first ones to go in there and they go, listen, we're going to pay this much money and you know, you guys are going to get some sort of back-end deal if you don't allow anybody else to come in. So the municipalities, the cities, no longer allow competition to be driven. I think the FCC would have been far better off saying, no, wait a minute, you cannot do that. You need to allow competition to come in. You need to allow there to be more than one internet service provider when it comes to cable. So Comcast and Time Warner and RCN and all the other ones start competing in the same area. You can't have a one-way street with one person going up that road and saying, well, this is it. This is what we're doing. We only had Time Warner Cable in New York City when it came to cable providers. Yeah, sure, mm-hmm. you could get DSL. You could get satellite.
That's all under Title II.
It's all under Title II. Yeah, you could get Title II stuff. Yeah. But you can't get cable. Now, Fios is an anomaly here because Fios came in and was allowed in. Why? Because the municipalities, because they paid a lot of money to New York City, and New York City allowed them to come in.
This is the exact argument that Google is making this week, even. One of their guys, who was it? Their VP Access Services, Milo Meaden, or Meaden, I'm not sure how to say his last name, said at a Washington, D.C. conference, if you make it easy, we will come. If you make it hard, enjoy your Time Warner Cable.
Yeah, I mean,
and this all stems from the fact that they're having difficulties actually getting rights of way, actually figuring out what poles and utilities they can that exist that they can use or where they can actually put things.
Now,
that's the big issue that they have with Google Fiber. We have the technology. We can do Google Fiber. We can do fiber internet. The biggest hurdle is the permits and where you can place your lines, what's existing already, and can you use what's already existing to place your lines?
Yeah, and that's a problem.
That's why it is so difficult to get more competition. It's not necessarily the speed of the internet and a lot of the net neutrality type of stuff. It's the big issue is competition. It really is.
Yeah, and guess what? The ISPs also have these soft handshake agreements where they say, listen, I'm not going to go in your territory and you don't come in mine. And they go based on that. I mean, look what happened with guys, do we forget what happened a couple years ago with Verizon, Time Warner, and Comcast, what they did? Verizon Fios was coming into all these cities and towns. So they knew that it was going to be expensive to run the infrastructure. They really don't care for that. So instead what they did with both Comcast and Time Warner, they did a handshake agreement saying, listen, we're not going to go in your towns, but in return, give us spectrum. So the expansion within a competitive market totally ended because they all made an agreement not to compete with each other.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that happened. That happened a couple years ago. So, yeah, competition is great and open, a free market, an open market. The government should not be involved with telling me, you know, how to run my business. I understand that, but
this is what makes net neutrality so complex is that you have so many separate parts of net neutrality. You actually have the internet part of it, but you also have the competition side and the actual physical network of things.
So the other thing was part of this ruling was that municipalities cannot – states cannot forbid municipalities from – becoming their own ISPs.
Yeah, states can't do that.
States cannot forbid it. Like, they're I think 19 states.
And they have to be allowed to expand beyond their municipality. So let's say Bayside has their own municipal internet. And if they wanted to expand with another nearby city, currently they weren't able to do that.
They weren't able to do that.
Now,
I think that's great.
Under these new Title II definitions, specifically in these 8 pages, they're going to be able to allow to do that.
I mean, the whole argument about how free speech is going to be dead and they're going to control how much bandwidth you're using, that is exactly what they are going against with this bill. And if you think that this is going to affect your free speech in any way, you're an idiot. I really think you're a dummy.
Tell us how you really feel,
if
Andrew.
You honestly feel that this is going to impact your day-to-day free speech on the internet. This has nothing to do with it. They're just, for the most part, they're reclassifying broadband internet to fall under Title II. So it allows them more. It allows the government to say, no, you can and can't do this.
I mean, this is my problem is that FCC Commissioner Ajit Pai that's against this FCC document. I just don't see his argument.
Listen, this may be a bad thing.
I don't understand.
Okay?
He hasn't really laid out how these rules, whatever the rules are, because we still don't know exactly what they are.
We don't
know. Going to lead slower broadband speeds and more taxes. He really has not explained that to me.
And this is what I'm telling people. We don't know yet. So let's not get let's not jump to a conclusion yet for either side. We don't know exactly what's going to happen. We know some of it, and the stuff that I've heard, I kind of like. I kind of like the fact that the municipalities
I'm sort of neutral on this in the sense where I'm neutral, but I lean towards the positive side.
Yeah, listen,
because
me too.
The ideas of the government saying that states cannot restrict municipalities from expanding their municipal internet is a good idea, in my opinion. I mean, granted, I'm not saying that government and municipalities are great at doing these sort of things. I'm sure private companies are much better at it. But to have states restrict that because Comcast says that we don't want this because they've lobbied the local government, I think that's absolutely wrong. I think if municipalities want to expand and create their own municipal internet, they should be allowed to. Whether they do that well or not, that's a whole different horse, you know?
Someone in the chat goes, just tweet something positive about ISIS and you'll see how your free speech is. Well, listen, there's a difference between free speech and being able to say what I want and express my opinions, that nobody is not allowing you to say that. Nobody is going to you on the internet and saying you are going to be punished for expressing your opinions. If something that I'm saying is offensive, that's not going to. I'm going to be yelled at. That's fine. That's your right to yell at me, and it's my right to say something stupid. But you're not going to get a knock on the door saying, you know, John, you said that you were you're very unhappy with your country right now. You're going to jail. This whole like mentality that we're losing our free speech. Live in a country where you have none of this, and then talk about free speech. Live in a country where you fear just even remotely criticizing your government. We are nowhere near that.
I think what it comes down to is that those people making those arguments for free speech being taken away, higher taxes and slower speech, I just don't see that they've made their argument clearly. That's what it comes down to for me. I'm not saying that they're not wrong or anything like that. They could be right. They could be. But I am not convinced given the argument that they've, laid out. They just really have not made a very good argument. They're saying is that it's going to be bad for people, and they haven't explained why.
Well, was
bad.
Our free speech impacted when we had DSL internet?
I don't think so.
Okay. But, no. But again, in the chat room, GFKeeper 83461 is saying you could end up on a no-fly list. Well, You're saying something stupid if you're saying something positive about a terrorist group that's attacking, you know, hundreds and tens of thousands of people worldwide, and it's not the same. It's not the same comparison. You're still allowed to say something. You're still allowed to go online on the internet and say what you want. Now, if you end up on a no-fly list, that was your own doing. It's not the same thing at all. You can't even compare the two. If you're being an idiot and you're being, that's one thing. If you're criticizing a company or a business or your local government or your federal government with a statement that makes sense, you're not going to be punished. If I go on the internet and say, you know what, I'm really disappointed with my government and the way that my government is going, the way that my country's going, I'm not going to get a knock at the door by the federales taking me away. That's not happening. At least not yet.
I kind of want to see that happen now.
There's a difference between people have a misconception of what free speech is. You know, like you can't go in the street and start yelling and screaming. And when you suffer the consequences of what you're doing, you start screaming about how your free speech is being taken away.
All I'm saying is that nobody is wrong or right.
No, we don't know yet. We don't know. That's the whole thing.
They could be right. But my whole point with what they're saying is that they haven't explained clearly why that's their argument, why it's going to eliminate free speech, why it's going to raise taxes on
it may raise the ta- no
why
listen
it's
I,
slow
I don't
down the internet.
Now I don't
All,
think
they've simply said it's going to slow down the internet, it's going to raise taxes, and it's going to eliminate free speech.
I don't
they
see how it's going
to said why any of that's going yeah. to happen.
Well, listen, let me just say this. I do think that we are going to see possible raised taxes. We're going to see some added fees.
We could have seen that regardless.
But I'm not, and it, that makes total sense. And I'm not disagreeing with that. Will we see a slowdown in our internet? There's nothing that proves that we will. There's nothing
that proves that we wouldn't otherwise.
There's nothing that proves that we wouldn't, but there's nothing that proves that we will see that. I haven't read anything in any of these rulings that say that my internet service is going to now be crippled because it's going under Title II. DSL was under Title II. I didn't lose any kind of freedom when I was on DSL. Because it was
DSL. The whole point that somebody was making on Facebook the other day was saying that it's 332 pages. Do we really need 332 pages to lay out a document that says that the internet should be neutral? But when you think about the fact that only 8 pages of that are really laying that part out, and the other pages are the comments from the public during the comment period. But then I was told that's wrong too, so what do I know?
Listen, again, I'm not saying that I know everything with this. I'm expressing my opinion, much like everybody else is expressing their opinion at this point, because they don't know the facts. We don't know anything about this as far as, you know, what is provided. If we speculate, it's only going to go, we're going to go deeper into that rabbit hole.
Right.
We
simply don't know enough to make a 100% informed decision on this one way or the other. In theory, everything sounds good. In theory. But, I mean, there's been some comparisons of this versus Obamacare whereby, oh, well, you got to pass it to see what's in it.
Yeah, and that's stupid. I mean, that's a little silly.
Comparing those two, no, I think that's a little bit of a unfair comparison whereby we knew a lot of what was actually going to be in Obamacare before it passed. I mean, yes, there was a ton of stuff we didn't know, but there was a lot of stuff that we did know with Obamacare before it passed. If that makes any sense.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm still making any sense whatsoever.
It's not the same thing. It's not, you know, like I get the comparison. I understand it. A lot of people are freaking out over this, but there's nothing necessarily that's new in this ruling. It's a reclassification of how they're defining broadband. That's all it is.
And apparently on a case-by-case basis.
Let me ask this.
I think either way, what happens is that this is not going to be the end of this. Verizon already says that they're going to sue over this. And a lot of the experts say that this is going to end up in Congress anyway, where they're going to have to write some sort of new bill because Title II doesn't necessarily fit net neutrality in the internet. The internet is a completely different beast than telecommunications that Title II was actually originally written for.
Okay, so here's the thing, okay? And let's play devil's advocate. If the government didn't interfere with, you know, telecommunication acts where they, you know, they made it into a utility in the 30s, how would it have evolved if there was no government intervention and no government regulation of the phone systems and, you know, just how that worked?
Would it
have been better? Would it have been worse? I don't know. I can't tell you. As far as I know, it's pretty good.
Are people happy with the way things are now in terms of the monopolies between Comcast and Time Warner and Verizon, et cetera?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. Are we happy right now with our broadband?
Are we happy now with the level of competition and the choices that we have between internet providers?
Well,
I think the majority of people would say no.
I think you're absolutely right. I think most people will say no. I think most people will say that the service is subpar. I think most people will say that they're not happy with the service they're getting. They're not happy with their speeds. A lot of people can't access certain services. Most people will say that they're not happy. Right. I'm not one of those people. I'm very happy. I live in New York City. I have Fios. I could get up to 500 megabits a second if I wanted, up and down. But the
but
guy,
you have other choices too besides Verizon, correct?
Well, yeah, I have Time Warner
for really high speed internet. You could, if you wanted to, you have Comcast in your area.
No,
correct?
I do not. I do not have Comcast.
Do you have Time Warner Cable?
I have Time Warner Cable, but okay. Remember, Time Warner Cable was the only game in town till 2009. The only game in town.
Hmm.
We had no other option.
I mean, that's kind of the boat I'm in the sense that if I need something 50 megabits per second or faster, the only option that I have is Comcast. Yes, AT&T does exist in this area.
But wait a minute. What does AT&T fall under? What does AT&T fall under?
AT&T actually falls under the DSL stuff.
Title 2, yeah.
They're still using, in some areas, telephone lines for their U-verse.
Yeah.
And the fastest that I can get with AT&T U-verse in my area is 45 megabits per second down. That's probably fine for the majority of people out there, but for somebody like myself that works from home, does a lot of data-heavy stuff in terms of work with GFQ and everything else.
It's not going to work for you, yeah.
It's just not going to cut it.
I'm more fascinated in what they're going to do with mobile and wireless internet, how this bill is going to impact that, and that's my biggest question here. Mm-hmm. I don't think we're going to see much of a change when it comes to home broadband, other than reclassifying the term broadband and things like that, but how is this going to impact wireless? That's my biggest question here.
To be honest, at this point, I don't see anything changing.
I don't see
as a result of this document passing the FCC. I don't expect there to be any changes.
Verizon, by the way, has promised not to sue over net neutrality if FCC avoids utility rules. Did you see that story? Yeah, that was an old story that they had. I don't know if they're going to stick to that now.
I'm sure they're going to try and sue.
Isn't this amazing? This all stems from Comcast, really? That was like the catalyst here over BitTorrent. This all, and it bit them in the ass. I bet you they wish they never went to court over this.
It's a good question.
Yeah. Listen.
Let's move on to another story.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. Pick something.
Pebble returned to Kickstarter this week with their next generation smartwatch. It's a color smartwatch based on e-paper. That's what they used, I believe, in their previous version. But now it's color e-paper, right? And they've already raised over $1 million on Kickstarter in the first day.
Yeah, a lot of people are excited for this.
And I know you're a watch guy.
I am.
I'm not exactly a watch guy, but...
I am a watch guy, but I'm not a smartwatch guy. I don't really care for a smartwatch right now. I think they're not where they should be. But the benefit of these Pebble watches is that you get a much better battery life than you would with, you know, the Samsung smartwatch or, you know, the LG smartwatch, because it requires less power to power that screen.
Yeah, and that's exactly what one of the executives was saying, was that they actually tested OLED and LCD in their new watch, but when it came to it, it just did not offer the battery life that they were looking for. Whereas with e-paper, I mean, yeah, you don't necessarily get the nicest display and stuff, but it gives you a display that you can use all day long
Up to 7 days you could get with this, like the original Pebble. I know a lot of people were really excited for the Pebble. They loved their Pebble a couple of years ago, and they just didn't move quickly enough. You know, that was the problem with them. But they were crowdfunded. I mean, that's how it started, really.
It takes a lot of development for this stuff.
Yeah. I just think it's at a bad time considering, you know, there's so many other smartwatches and a lot of people are looking for...
And you have a new one coming out in a couple of months. Apple actually says that they're scheduling a March 9th event ahead of their smartwatch debut.
Yeah.
We're expecting the smartwatch to debut in April. So this makes totally sense that they're going to have an event on March 9th. Supposed to debut officially the new Apple Watch in its entirety.
So the event is going to be on March 9th. They're going to unveil the line. I'm sure we're going to get pricing for the gold model. The very expensive anticipated gold model. I've heard anything from like $1,000 to $5,000 for this watch. think it's a little dopey to pay that much money for a first-gen device that's going to lose value. I've also seen the argument where people say, well, no, it's a first-gen device. You're going to keep the value. No, you're not, because that's not how it works. Technology is not jewelry.
You're not going to be able to...
Technology is not jewelry. You can't compare this to a Rolex. In 30 years, do you think you're going to be able to run this device, this watch? No. You're not going to be able to run this in 20, 30 years. Technology evolves. Technology changes. It's not the same as a regular watch. It's not a Rolex. It's not a Omega. It's not a Bulova. This is a piece of technology that you put on your wrist. I think they're going to sell a tremendous amount of them. The entry level one, you know, the $399 or whatever it is, they're going to sell a ton of these things. I would not get one because it's a first gen device, and I'm waiting.
I'm actually skeptical about the Apple Watch because we've seen articles saying that they stripped back a lot of features in order to make this work. And then this week we're seeing that they want the watch to actually replace a whole host of things. They want it to replace your key fob for your keys. They want it to replace a whole bunch of things. They want this to be as successful, if not more successful, than the original iPhone.
I don't think that's going to be a reality.
That's the expectation that they're setting up for the Apple Watch.
I mean, I guess that's a reality, right?
They want this to be as revolutionary as the original iPhone was.
You know how that was going to be revolutionary?
And I just don't see that happening.
You know how it would have been revolutionary if we got all those, you know, those sketches we saw online for years where it was like a cuff. It was like this transparent cuff, the space-aged material. That's how you would have sold tens and millions and millions. Listen, I'm sure they're going to sell millions of this thing, and I'm sure it's going to be the most successful smartwatch on the market. I personally don't think they're going to get the anticipation. It's not going to be as highly anticipated as the iPhone was or the iPad was.
No.
I think this is a very niche market.
I think you're already setting yourself up with a much smaller market to begin with than you would with a phone. A phone can appeal to practically anybody, but a watch. There are people that have absolutely no desire for a watch, to wear a watch these days, let alone a smartwatch.
I mean, the bigger Apple story, I think, was that Apple's working. Apple has 200 workers on a car that could launch by 2020.
This is according to Bloomberg.
More knowledge about the Titan electric vehicle project supposedly underway in Cupertino. According to the report, the team is up to 200 people with experts on batteries and robotic technology joining recently. While A123 and Tesla may have an idea where some of the battery experts came from, even this rumor. So essentially, they want to get into the car business. They want to create an electric car. Google's coming up with the same thing. They're coming up with a self-driving vehicle. I think this is really interesting for Apple to do this.
I find this story to be complete BS.
You don't think it's a positive? You don't think it's a reality? I think they do have people working on it.
They might have a few people working on it, but I don't think it's something that's viable. I mean, not even in 5 years, I don't think this is necessarily viable.
Yeah, I mean, listen, they don't know.
That's what it sounds like they want to do. They want to create these products that live up to the original debut of the iPhone. That's what they want to do. They want to create the revolutionary stuff that was behind the original iPhone, the way that the original iPhone was so revolutionary compared to everything else. I don't know that they can necessarily duplicate that success ever again.
I definitely think they can.
It's a once-in-a-lifetime type of thing.
Well, you also have to remember, a lot of the designs that Apple had, you know, let's talk about the MacBook Pro. The MacBook Pro, like a 2011, 2010 MacBook Pro, it's a beautiful machine. It's obviously, you can get the specs everywhere else, but people buy because it's a very attractive machine. It's nice components. It just feels good, and that's why you pay the premium. You get that with any PC manufacturer at this point. Every single PC manufacturer has their MacBook-style higher-end computer, higher-end laptop. When the iPhone came out, there was nothing like it. There was nothing like the design. Again, feature-wise, a lot there were people doing the stuff. I mean, remember, there was a whole copy-and-paste issue. The first iPhone was not really anything that was amazing. It was just a nice looking phone, so people bought it and they got it right, you know, for the next one. The iPad is an exception. The thing was, there was nobody else doing it. Now, for every product that Apple has, there's 20 other companies doing the exact same thing.
Sure.
So, I don't think we're going to get this, oh my God, look at this device type thing, because they've done everything that they can. They've reached the plateau. I guess they plateau when it comes to technology and I guess being ahead.
I would agree with that.
When it comes to design. Everybody yes. is now capable of putting out their design. People understand how it works. Listen, I don't know. Is Apple going to be the first that creates a futuristic watch that people want to buy? I don't know. It's possible.
Even look at the fact that this whole Apple CarPlay business hasn't taken off whatsoever. I think it was Toyota this week announced and said that they're actually not really looking into doing anything with CarPlay in the near future. Even though that they said that they were, but they're really not anymore. So CarPlay at this point is all but dead.
I haven't seen in any 2015 vehicles that have come out already, and that's a little disappointing because they were supposed to be in the 2015 models, and there's nothing. Infiniti has put a delay on this. I mean, everybody's put a delay on this.
Part of that is due to the fact that these manufacturers are just so slow to adopt and do this stuff, but that's one of the reasons why I say all this stuff is just more than 5 years away.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. It's definitely more than 5 years away. I mean, just the way that things work out, like, you know, it takes time. I don't think Apple with
excellent idea. I would love the fact that I could walk into a car and have my display from my phone automatically show up on the navigation or display in my car.
I think a lot of people like that. I think the problem here is it's the automotive industry. And they're very slow.
Totally.
They're very slow. It's not the tech business. It's the automotive business. So they're very slow to kind of adapt new technologies.
And it has to work regardless of what device you have, whether it's Windows Phone, Android, or iOS.
I'll tell you something. You know, John, I had a 2009 Infiniti. And guess what? It didn't have Bluetooth music streaming.
It's pathetic.
In a 2009. In a 2009.
Actually, displays are awful.
I mean, I have a 2012 now, and
awful.
It has it. Yeah, and you know what? You got to pay $150 to go download a new map every year.
To be honest, my parents have a Toyota Prius, and they don't use the navigation in it because it sucks. The maps are just horrible.
What do they use, Google Maps or Apple Maps?
They use either one, whichever one they get to on their phone.
MapQuest. They're printing it out.
It's far superior to what you get in your in-dash navigation.
Yeah, I you know, it's we have to really think about how this works. You know, we all want these new things. We all want everything to work seamlessly.
Technology,
and we want the greatest.
To do this does exist to a degree, at least. It's just that the manufacturers of cars are so behind on this stuff.
They've always been behind, and they always will be. I mean, that's just how it is.
And even as it is, they don't do a very good job of incorporating technology that does exist. And that's what's really sad, is that even the technology that you see in cars today is really crappy.
Yeah. So, John, before we wrap up, just a little quick note. Leonard Nimoy from Star Trek, if you don't know him, he has passed away at age... Spock. He has passed away at 83 years old. Yesterday, he was admitted to the hospital for, I'm not too sure what reason, and the news broke out about an hour or two ago that he passed away. So sad. I'm a big Star Trek fan, so.
Oh, obviously.
I never liked Star Wars. I was never a Star Wars fan, sadly. My father's a huge Star Wars fan. So is my mother-in-law, actually. Like, they're crazy, crazy Star Wars. I was a Star Trek guy. He was suffering from chest pains, according to Curtis B. in our chat room.
Yeah, that's
so,
it.
So the geek world is saddened by this loss. Just sad, you know, when you hear about that. But he lived a long life. So rest in peace to the best first officer ever.
So live long and prosper.
Live long and prosper. All right, guys, let's wrap it up for today. Go to our website, gfknetwork.com. If you miss any portion of the show, you can catch it archived there. Of course, we're on iTunes, wherever our podcasts are available. You can follow John on Twitter at Suncast. You can follow me on Twitter at Andrew Zarian. You can follow GFQ Network at GFQ.
By the way, guys, yeah. I have a Spotify playlist.
Yes.
I've tweeted it out on GFQ Network. If you want to, you can follow my playlist on Spotify.
So I started working on a playlist last night.
Oh, did you?
I did.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I did. So I'm going to be adding my playlist. We're just doing something fun, and we're just sharing our playlists. Let's see who else we could get to do that. All right, yeah. That's it for this week, guys. See you all later. Take care.